So I guess you prefer to be called Mutt and not Mort.
Oh, Mutt is my Yiddish name, and when I played ball, that was my name. And only people of very old acquaintance call me Mutt. But when there are people like Brian Williams and some others, they call me Mutt because they prefer to be more acquainted, intimate with.
Is that short for Muttle?
Muttle.
Muttle, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to, for the sake of this, to remind you that I'm here as a member of the Harvard
Village
Residents Association board.
And Gus is across the road.
That's right. And
Rory. Rory! Yeah. You remember you opened the trunk to deliver something to my kitchen and left the trunk open? It drained the battery, so for 8 days I didn't have my jar?
Okay.
He just came back from the West Coast.
I haven't seen him yet. Yes, I know Rory well.
So we're not doing, as well as I do.
No, for sure. So we're doing this to learn about the changes that have occurred in our neighborhood. I would just like to start by saying thank you. And your name is?
Morton. My niece, great niece, said when she first heard it, she said, "Your name is Morton?" Because she always called me Uncle Mutt.
And your last name?
Greenberg. But it isn't a last name. It's just a name made up when my parents arrived.
So what? Do you know what the name was? You don't
know. It's thought to be Gorenberg.
Uh-huh, right.
Because my uncle Itzik in St. Louis was Gorenberg. His family is Gorenberg. And my great, whatever the relation is, has said to me, she's done some research and she's pretty confident that the name is Gorenberg. But I don't know what Goren in German or Yiddish or whatever language. Berg I know, but I don't know. See.
And of course, but you're going by Greenberg here in Canada.
I'm not going by it. It was given me. It was it was tattooed on my, but I can't show you that. It's too private.
Would you tell us, please, when you moved into this house?
My brother Joe says, 85 years ago. Because I have only lived here 82 plus. And when I wanted to find out precisely and tell Gus how long we've been resident here, because there was the naming of the lane up the, at 104.
That's the Louis Lackey?
Say again?
Is that the Louis Lackey Lane?
No, it's the Greenberg Lane.
Oh, the Greenberg Lane.
Well, if you see, you're asking the wrong person. Should start at the source, Brother Joe and Gus, who has sworn to go over because Joe was responsible for that article in the paper called Boys of Major Street.
Yes, and I will certainly phone your brother.
And that lane is going to be named up on Harvard Street. It should have been named leading from behind the east side of Major Street, because that's where they all lived. But that's been named St. John's Lane for the nun who occupied prior to the doctor's hospital. The St. John's Order is now up in Comer Boulevard. I'm taking you away from your...
Right, okay. So if you could... So your family moved in here 85 years ago.
But they lived elsewhere, and I don't know where.
Okay, but we're just interested in this, and 85 is enough. And you were born 82 plus years ago in this
1929.
Home. 1929. And who else was living here when you were born here?
11 people were living here, but not all family.
Okay, so...
Okay, of the family, one sister had died before I was born. Of the three on this... that would be Sarah. She died before I was born. And Sister Rose and Sister Dorothy, plus father and mother, Joe, Dave, me.
So you're the youngest of the children.
Well, it's up to you to determine that. I'm not going to tell you their ages. It's not right for me to speak about other people's ages.
Right. Okay. So, but you said there were... So your family lived here, your parents... Your siblings, and a few other people. Who were they?
Schreinen.
Neighbors.
Tenants.
Okay.
Three tenants. Man, wife, child.
So that means 11 people were living in this home.
I didn't mention Johnny in the cellar, who was a Polish gentleman I never knew much about, who helped with the lighting of the Shabbos candles and cooking and whatnot.
So, and there was one bathroom, I assume.
One bathroom. 6x8, still there.
Okay, so 11 of you plus the person downstairs?
I believe so.
12 of you
living? Well, I don't know if that's 12. You figure it
out. Well, okay, so 11 or 12, and you all shared one bathroom.
Yeah.
And I guess you all shared one kitchen?
Of course.
Yeah.
The kitchen is about 4 times the size of the washroom, at least. At least. And this had one of these pull-down chains. But all that was changed before my mom passed away. The kitchen was all redesigned, and the bathroom was all different, and a little two-piece toilet for my mom in the kitchen.
So you added a two-piece bathroom on the main
floor.
It
used to be a closet.
Right.
So a guy named Louis I kind of indicated what we needed, bought the appliances, and everything was changed on her behalf, so she wouldn't have to climb up the stairs.
Do you have some idea of when that would have been?
She passed away 1970. So it would have been 1968, 69.
Okay. So many of you lived here with one bathroom for many, many years.
Wait a sec. People were already married and left.
But when your family...
I was the only one left in the house when the change in the house occurred. I had returned from UCLA, got a job, left for Europe, came back, and I decided for no particular reason... It was silly to have a basin where my father would kill the chickens in the kitchen, and people would bring in the chickens on the floor, and my father would deal with them in a pious way. And then I don't know why, but it was just something I chose to do. Kitchen was remodeled. Papered, hasn't been changed. The paper hasn't been changed. The toilet has not been changed, except it's not a pull chain a flush. There's been a shower installed, and I took the leggings off
the bathtub.
Yeah, I have dry mouth. Leggings off the bathtub so she wouldn't have to hoist herself in.
Right.
But she always did, and I was very stern with my mother because I wouldn't let her feel pity or would ask me for things to do, and I wouldn't do them for her. I just insisted she do them for herself. But she expired because of a faulty ground gravity furnace, and I almost did too, lying
in.
Yeah. See, my room at that time did not have a heat register, so I never was influenced by the effluence from, but my mother went to bed New Year's Eve.
So some bad toxin fumes came through?
I could go on with this story, but it's not necessary. And I barely got up from sleep one morning and struggled out to the porch before I regained my respiratory whatever and called the oil person in, and he said nothing wrong. Check the
Would
chimney.
Would you like me to give you some water?
No, that doesn't help.
Okay.
Check the chimney. Chimney guy said nothing. Brought back the guy from the oil, and he said, "Oh, if there's anything wrong, I'll put this bomb on top, and if there's a leak, it'll show." Well, he put the bomb on top, and it was like Vesuvius, and he wrote, "Not responsible for anyone after I leave this call." So I had that removed and put in a gas furnace, and that was changed to another gas furnace, and that's how I've lived since. My mother passed away very quietly, died in her sleep, and there was a phone over there and a chair, And my lady friend phoned to find out where I was, and I had been in New York with my third from the right nephew, showing him Broadway and enjoying a number of plays. And Brother Dave came in the next morning. My sister Dorothy was preparing breakfast. How is Mom? I haven't been up yet. He went up and found her dead. And they found me in New York. I don't know how. And left a note on, didn't say, but left a note on the door. I said to my nephew, Barry, I think my mother has died. How do you know? I said, well, for them to find us in this outlandish area, no phone. So I phoned home, and we came for Friday because it wouldn't have been a burial on Saturday and Shabbos. And that was January the 1st.
Of what year?
1970. A friend of mine was making his debut at the Met. He's on the wall in the hall, singing in Madame Butterfly. And Ricky and I have been friends for a long time, but I never got to see his debut at the Met. Mm. But I loved Ricky and saw him many times. And unfortunately, he died 6 days after Birgit Nilsson, whom you may know or may not know. She was the greatest soprano of her day.
Let me get back into our interview. And I'm wondering if you can just think of the neighborhood. And you've been here all your life. I mean, you went away for certain periods of time. But what, to you, are the outstanding changes that you've seen in this neighborhood?
None, because it's always been an immigrant neighborhood. I've always been a go-between between the kids and the parents because they gained confidence and affection. When they needed anything in the house, they came right on by.
But in the neighborhood, you're saying... You're saying it's always been an immigrant neighborhood?
Always been an immigrant, and except for the young yuppies who've come in and torn the innards out and redid it. Guy bought two homes, 100 and 102, tore off the porches to make them look more modern, presumably, so that he could sell them. And that's what he did. Now, I resented that because he damaged the roof. But I just live. I don't really care for much because I have too many other practical, reasonable, resolvable things. How everybody else does things is beyond me.
But in terms of changes, you said that, is it still an immigrant neighborhood?
Well, my best friends are all Portuguese.
Uh-huh.
So the one next door is an elderly woman. She's Portuguese, but she's rented out a couple of rooms. One's a guy who plays the guitar, Tommy. Next to them is a family of Portuguese. The next one on the corner was a Jewish household, sold to a friend of mine from Hungary. He fixed it up. He paid $500. He sold it for $780. And that family of seven sold it for $920, and it's occupied by a single woman whom I tried to acquaint, but she would have none of it, and she's renting it out to a couple of people.
So the way you see it is immigrants who are still here, and then yuppies who have bought it for escalated
yuppies
prices.
And students who rent out these homes, aside from Gus and the ones south of him, there are homes owned by a gentleman who rents them out every year as long as the student is here. They every summer go away and another group comes in. Right. So I never got acquainted with them.
Right.
Never.
Now, when you lived here, your family, there was a tenant downstairs who wasn't Jewish.
No, he wasn't a tenant. He was just a guy that helped out.
Okay.
And all he wanted was a piece of bread and a piece of chicken. He didn't speak much English.
Right, but he could do whatever...
I have no idea. I was a kid. I was a child.
Okay. But the household has now changed because you're living here by yourself. So could you give me some idea of when this house changed? It's one person here and there were 11 or 12 people here.
Well, the brothers got married, the girls got married, and that was it. Sister Rose got married in 1941. She had a child in 1942. I was 12 and I turned 13. Joe got married in 1958. I was on my way to Europe, but since he was going to get married, I had to wait on the wedding. 1958, 42, 50. He's been married 54 years this year.
Okay, so as the years went on, more and more people moved out.
Well, my sister Dorothy went to Palestine to be a pioneer with her husband, 1940 and 41. I was only 10 and 11.
And but then nobody else moved in. Once the home became just for your family.
Well, what was left of us, my father, my mother, and me.
Right. And now it's yours. You're here by yourself.
It's not mine. I own it, but it's not mine. My parents took 10 years to pay off $2,000. I took it 10 minutes to pay off whatever, to buy it for my siblings. I didn't think they should have sold it to me because they're going to inherit it anyway, but they wanted money for it. I gave them the money, just a few scrawls on a check, but I've never considered it my home.
But
it's my parents.
It's nice the way you describe it. It took your parents 10 years to pay $2,000 and it took you 10 minutes.
Nickels and dimes,
yeah. That was a lot of money at that time.
Well, you can make that decision for yourself. 10 years at $200 a year.
Yeah.
That's $4 a week.
Yeah. So can you talk, in terms of the changes, waves of immigration, what have you seen?
I am so disinterested because I accept everything. I don't query or question. When they come by and say, "Mort, I need help," that's the only time I find out something's happening. But they bring in food. They consult with me, they visit with me, I take them to my hockey games when I played, I take them to Maple Leaf Gardens, because I was very, how should I put it, I had a reputation working for CBC as the only person that brought in items, filmed items, and well, that went for the university, the high schools, public schools, every sport there is, all the track and field, all the swimming events, all the football, all the baseball.
Now, would you explain what you mean when you say you brought in these
Well, events? I was self-assigning. The guys who were on television said, "What have you got for me today? I've got an interesting young man plays basketball for St. Michael's. He happened to be the coach of the professional team and then the national team. I have an item on Bruce Simpson, our national pole vaulter, and I was encouraged to film him to show him how to improve his techniques. A lot of people said, "Would you help me determine how slow film something in slow motion so we can break down the aspects of his
discipline?" Did you study filmmaking at UCLA? Is that what you studied?
No, I studied theater arts and sociology. I worked at the gas station. You may as well come into the kitchen because there may be stuff that you can. Talking is fine, but there's a picture or two worth thousands of words that might assist you. Well, let's get through the talk aspect.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Okay.
Don't be happy.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Okay. So you're saying you didn't have much interest, but I wonder whether you could describe the different ethnic groups who were here. You talked about the Portuguese, you talked about that.
Well, there are all kinds. There's a group that works at Harvard Bakery. They've worked there for years. The son, John, has been a good friend of mine. When I came out of hockey one night and I had 5-6 kids, prepubescent, I don't know. The battery was dead. So they pushed me all the way from Eglinton to here. And each of those kids, I loved them. I'd bring them in, we'd have hot dogs and beans. When I was away, I bought a ping pong table and they used the cellar, and they cut up a lot of carpets to decorate the cellar. I never thought about who they were or where they were from. I just went into their homes, hugged and kissed their mothers, shook hands with their fathers. That's the way it's always been.
Did your family belong to a shul?
Of course.
Where was that one?
Well, it was on Center Avenue. That is no longer there. And so they set up a shtiebel, Markham and Ulster. Why are you asking me this? Joe's the president. It's silly for me to respond to things.
I will interview Joe. I look forward to that.
Well, it's not worthy of me to take up his portion. And you know, portion is a portion. When you go into your bar mitzvah, you got to read that old portion. Anyway, shul was on Center Avenue, just a bit east and south of Dundas and University. A wonderful, magnificent building. And it was supervised. It was mainly run by relatives of ours called the Zimmermans. He was an elegant gentleman with a white beard, and his family were his choir, and they lived at number 50. I didn't know them very much.
50 Major Street?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't know them very much. He was quite elegant. There were others. There was a rabbi at 108 in the apartments there that is now owned and occupied by Portuguese friends. Dear, dear friends. When the mother died, look at you may want much of what I can't tell you, and I'm not able, because I do not have the investment in, as my brother Joe has. He's always known the people, always known of them, because he shared the Air Force induction, and let's see, about the neighborhood. I just knew it was a place where I grew up, and everyone was the same. Nobody had any bicycles. Oh, one person had a bicycle. That was not a very pleasant person in the end. We made up our own games. We made up our own contraptions. Orange crates on a 2x4 with a skate.
Some wheels.
Wheels at either end. Toboggan, whatever we call them. I didn't like haircuts, so my mother asked Mr. Roberts to trap me on the street and put a pot on my head and cut around. Yeah, those are
wonderful stories. Valuable to us.
Well, that's what it was.
Because you're saying that right now, I think you're insinuating that people buy a lot of toys, and when you were young, you made toys,
yeah.
And you played inside.
We played our own games. Yeah,
yeah. So that
Buck
so you were
up, Relievo, Chase the White Horse. I can't tell you how many, there was an immigrant family from England in 133. There was a black and French Canadian family around the corner. As far as I know, those were the non-Jewish. We grew up in a community that, despite the absence of parents because they were at work, those who remained were monitors of our behavior.
So whichever parents were around watched all the kids.
Absolutely. Everybody knew everybody else, and they mustn't behave or else. I don't know what the or else was, because we never misbehaved.
And did the mothers work? Were a lot of the mothers working?
What do you mean? Keeping house, cooking, sewing.
Right. But were some of them working outside the home?
No. Uh-huh. Only my mother.
Your mother worked outside the home?
Because she had to pluck the chickens, flick the chick. My father would shochet. He slaughtered the chickens, and my mother and he would pluck them for the neighbors for 6 cents.
And that was done right in your home?
Not at first.
Yeah.
It was done, but then the Jewish mayor of Toronto got a, apparently, you see, you're asking, I was only a kid, and you're asking me to give you mature version of something that Joe can tell you precisely.
Okay,
you should have started with him.
Yeah, but
and pick up the rest.
And you're saying, but your mother did work with your father.
Well,
so you do remember that.
Well, we had also from. There used to be a burlap business on College Street, Harry Eisen. He was from the same area my parents were before they were killed by the Cossacks. And so we took out the twine or the thread, and so we got paid for doing that. I remember being part of that. And I started work at 12. And did jobs until I left for school at UCLA, and always whatever portion of that was, I don't know, whatever I made, I gave or shared, because there was no money in the family. Joe, at 18, in 1941, had left for service. Brother Dave was the only working member. My pa would go to the Feld and recite poems over the dead on certain occasions. They'd give him a handful of nickels and dimes. He'd bring it home and pour it out on the table.
So your father was a shoichet?
Well, that's exactly what I've been saying.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that would be. My father had a number of jobs, but you see, it's silly. I was not relating anything about my father because I knew nothing about my father. Let's stick with something you think I should know something about.
Okay, tell me, what school did you go to?
I went to a school called Lansdowne. It's now called Lord Lansdowne. I would go into a lane and walk down the very lane I think they should have named Boys of Major Street, but they changed it, they did it without inquiring. And I arrived on Robert Street, and I spent from 1934 to 1942. And finishing that, I went to Harvard Collegiate, and I spent from 1942 to 1947. Then, because I didn't think the parents could afford university, I took a course in accountancy by correspondence from Queen's University. I didn't like it. Nothing made anything of me or I of it. And so I applied to be as far away from home in case things were not quite easy enough. And I went to UCLA by bus, back and forth. And I didn't really enjoy UCLA because I wasn't part of anything. And they missed out because I was really a talented person. How do I know? Because on return, they asked me to write a musical for the dentistry faculty, and it was done. No problem. Sat down, wrote several songs, wrote the outline, the storyline. But I had the great job of working at the gas station, Chevron Gas. And I met wonderful people, Jack Dempsey for one, a great heavyweight champion, and through a number of encounters, the time was spent very, very well. I wasn't a great student. I was B average throughout, presumably, and I did okay. And when I was asked to join the main office of Chevron, the large oil company, because I was trusted and admired by the people who saw me at work for 3 years, I said I missed the seasons and I have elderly parents. But had I done that, it would have been a totally different experience. I came home. Then I worked at CBC, got fed up with the bureaucracy, and decided I was going to take 6 weeks off because I hadn't my vacation the previous year. And a friend said, what can you see in 6 weeks? So I quit, and I spent 32 months with all these wonderful human beings, great opera singers, musicians, and theater people, ballet people. It was a part of my life that has nothing to do with this neighborhood, except when they came back, I became something more interesting, presumably, because none of these people at the time, so far, I don't know if any of them have any ambitions towards what I enjoy.
And what is it that you enjoy?
Well, just what I told you. The theater, the arts, the...
But you began to work in that area as
no,
a photographer.
No, I never worked in it.
But
I
you were as a photographer
I was
in the sports?
I was a sports cameraman.
Okay, so how did you come to that?
Well, I was always a sports person. I always played basketball, baseball, hockey.
But then you got behind the camera.
No, I was not what you consider. I have a... There's a camera on the floor over there. Cost me $46,000. I bought it because they were switching from film to video, but they fired me because of somebody's desire to be an empire builder. His name was Dobigan, and he fired everybody in his way, as he presumed. Now, when I went out with my camera, I found people of interest, so that when I came back, the people on camera said, "What have you got for us?" And I told them, I have a football story, a hockey story, a track and field story, a swimming story, whatever, a horse story. And that was accepted because I was the senior member. I was the eldest. I had more sports experience. And all the wonderful people I worked with gained a trust, except one night Steve Douglas was on the air. And I had gone to Maple Leaf Gardens to see the Metropolitan Opera. And I had not known that behind him was a rear screen projection. And then by walking behind, not knowing, I cast my image, silhouette, across. And Steve said, "Good evening, sport fans and opera lovers." You see, these are so personal that conveying them means absolutely nothing. I'm taking it all out of your hands and going on in this undisciplined way. You really want to know about the neighborhood. Yeah. I cannot give you the kind of information you really,
okay.
really
want.
Can
I ask you some very specific questions?
You
then?
Can do anything.
Okay.
I'm wide open.
You talked about using the lanes. You walked through the lane to go to school.
Yeah.
Did you use the lanes in any other ways?
Well, I don't know which other way you're thinking of.
With your friends, playing with your friends.
Oh, no. The street.
The street.
That was our lane.
Uh-huh.
We skated on the street.
Uh-huh.
We played puck and stick. You take a length of broom, you take another length of broom, and you sharpen one end. You hit the sharpened end, it flies up. You strike it, it flies. If they catch it, you're out. If it lands, they throw it towards the length of your stick held upright, and you measure the number of lengths away from that stick. That's called puck and stick.
Now, do you see children playing those kinds of games?
No.
Now? Okay.
They have no idea what they're missing.
Okay.
No idea.
So that's a change because you use the street actively.
Then we made our own orange crate scooters.
Right.
They don't skate on the street. They don't. Oh, they have these now, these brand new multi-roller things. But we had roller skates, which we used to adjust by pulling out and in and tightening the bolt.
Yeah.
And we'd go, perhaps we would go to a place that had roller skating, but they don't have places that we frequented. Nobody plays baseball. In our childhood, every school had a playground and a tutor, a trainer. And that's what kept us off the street, in contact with another, training. And there's a picture here of the last national basketball championship team with my brother Dave. National championship. That group called the Lizzies. Kids are not like we were.
Okay.
And I have no idea why they're not further away from what... But you see, the same restraints of the early immigrants is still on them as they were on us. They don't fly off the handle. They don't go... I don't think there's one kid that does drugs.
Not in this neighborhood.
Right. The neighborhood is still a community that holds in its own way the control, discipline, and those who get married have families just like everyone else used to.
And that's why we're studying the community, because we...
But I can't speak for other communities.
Okay, but it is, this is a strong community.
I'm only speaking of this street.
Yeah.
Can't tell you what happened above Harvard. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what happened below Ulster.
So you know your street. But you also, you talked about the heating of your house change. What, do you remember as a child how the house was heated?
I told you, by a gravity furnace. You poured in the coal.
Yeah.
You took out the ashes from the bottom.
Yeah.
But then it was oil. And that was converted to oil, and that's what caused my parent to die and almost took my life.
Right. I'm going to ask you one question. You might think it's silly.
Nothing is silly. Okay. You don't know me at all, so what's the point of arguing the point? Go ahead.
What about dating? How people of your generation dated?
Well, that was a whole problem for me that never got into it. I was in an all-boys forum for 4 years, didn't know a girl at school, but I loved to dance, so when we held dances, but I always chose the least good-looking ones because I knew they weren't being attended to. As a matter of fact, I wrote a radio play on the basis of an experience I had in London. But in fifth year, I was in a mixed forum. My marks are apparently good enough.
Okay, now 1 minute. You're talking about form. Is that what we call grades?
Yeah. Okay. First form, second form, third form, fourth form,
so
fifth form.
So in grade five, you were in a mixed class. Or is that high school?
Well, that would be grade 13.
Oh, so the form, you're talking about high school. Oh, so okay, so in
grade
what?
1 to 8.
Yeah, and then the forms began.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. Grades 1 to 8 were right. Public school.
Okay.
8 to 13...
were form one, form two. First
right.
Form, second. Okay.
Right.
So when you were in fifth form, which we call grade 13, then you were saying something that happened.
I met a girl. Uh-huh. We became an item. She was the most beautiful, the prettiest, and most popular. And I just happened. I don't know how. Things happen. I don't know. I don't do them earnestly, intentionally. Because I allow things to happen and accept them so that I can have more than what I...
Yeah. So you look the flow.
I don't have any ambition. I didn't have... I just loved everything I did when I did it. I live in rather than for the...
present.
Moment.
The moment. Okay.
If you came, mm-hmm. I would live in that moment. If you didn't come, it wouldn't bother me mm-hmm. because it didn't happen.
So
and I'm
happened,
not going to blame anybody for that. It just didn't happen.
But you said earlier on you danced with the girls who were less attractive to give them a break.
No, not a break, because I knew they were being overlooked.
Uh-huh.
Later on, I loved dancing and I went to the large ballrooms in London and there was this pretty girl and she was standing there. And of course, the guys were looking, and they walked, and after a while, she started to back up, so that she wouldn't be completely visible, all around. And then finally, she wound up in a corner, so that nobody could see her except from the front.
Yeah.
And I wrote this play called Friday Afternoon, and so I went over and I said, "May I have this dance?" And she said, "No." Of course not, because she wanted to get back after all the insults.
Yeah.
I understood.
But nevertheless, in fifth form, this most beautiful girl,
Ellen Robbins, her young sister was Toby Robbins, who became quite an actress.
Right.
Toby loved me dearly and always wanted me to be part of the theater and always wanted me. Ellen was simply, I loved a tenor, always will, named UC Björling from Sweden. And I gave her Kujalida Manina from La Boheme, and she didn't like it. I spent 90 cents, 90 cents, 1947, yeah. 1946. And I should have known then there was no future for us.
Sorry.
So we were, I took her, we were at the Harvard homecoming, and I took the day off to go to see Al Jolson, the movie at a cinema that no longer exists, and I bought an orchid. Whoa. And I gave it to her, and I wrote the following. You tear open my box, you stick me with a pin. He holds you close till I'm all crushed in. You tear off my petals, my andrecium shows through. Who cares if you love me? I'm still quite stuck on you. She went off and married a very well-to-do gentleman from Cole's bookstore.
Oh,
Tubby
yeah.
was a football player at Harvard and has died within the last 3 years. And I phoned her not many months ago, and I said, when you're ready to be kissed again, let me know. We keep in touch somewhat. She sends $100 to the fund.
Oh, lovely, yes.
150 people send in money,
yeah.
some as much as 2,500. 2,000, my own is over 1,300. I'm not sure what's happened with the totals, but Frank Selke is the son of the man, and you should know, who was very important in the early days of the Montreal Canadiens, Frank Selke Sr. As a matter of fact, they name a trophy after the Selke Trophy. Frank's his son, and he's just a few months older than me. But we adore one another.
Would you talk about the stores on Harvard, how they were then and
no,
how they
no,
are now?
No. There were no. The stores on Major.
Okay.
We had, at the corner,
yeah.
we had a fish market, Harvard Fish Market. Next to it was the Harvard Bakery. Across the road was Orloff's Grocery. Over here, we had a Chinese laundry, but after the war, a Holocaust survivor became a grocery. Across the road was a grocery.
So there were lots of
Wait,
stores.
I'm not finished yet.
No, go ahead.
There were two on Ulster and Brunswick. One on the northeast, one on the northwest. The one on the northwest is still there. Not by Jews anymore. So we had to shop. Couldn't do it on the Sabbath. So we had, and sneak in on Sundays.
Oh my God, because they were closed on Sundays.
If we were caught
on
Sunday,
right.
it would be bad. So we'd go in, and we'd buy, and they'd write our name and amount, 5 cents, 12 cents.
So it was a credit system. So somebody would pay eventually.
Eventually. Everyone would pay.
But that
so
is very
had
different.
So we had the fish. You see, this was a self-contained neighborhood. What wasn't available at the corners were brought in by horse and wagon.
Wow.
And push carts. This wonderful bearded with the armor car came by with a tank of fish. And they'd come out, and he had a little scale, and they would reach in and he'd pick out and chop off the head, put it on the scale, and so on. And then the wagons would come, horse and wagons. Watermelon, watermelon, singing it out, and we'd buy watermelon or anything else. And of course, we were. There's a story about Jan Pierce, whose brother went onto an ice truck, got some ice, shards of ice to suck on, fell off, and got killed. And I said, you know what? Joe, you got to read this book. It's like Major Street, Lower East Side in New York. Absolutely just like Major Street. All the yuchnas and the yentas, and just like here. It was a wonderful book. Jan Pierce, who died, unfortunately, a miserable life, a miserable death. So we'd get on the ice trucks. We'd go to the tar when they were tarring the road and grab pieces of tar because we liked to chew on them.
Oh,
tar, good for the teeth. It really was good. When I ate sand, I didn't know why I ate sand, but there's minerals. There used to be a little sand plot on the corner here. And I used to eat. I didn't my parents were never around because they were always at this little place, little garage, next to the Western Hospital on Bathurst Street. But when someone...
Is that where they were doing the chickens?
Yeah. But when there was some business with the fleas and whatnot, the lice, they were obliged to leave. So that's when the house became the abattoir.
Oh, so there were fleas down there near the Toronto Western.
Yeah.
So then they began to use your house.
Why do you ask me? Because I was never there.
Yeah.
You see, you're telling me this.
Yeah. But anyway, after that, your home...
It's all hearsay.
But after that, your home became where they
killed and crocheted
the chickens.
Yeah, and I used to watch my father... Father testing the knife, that was absolutely flawless, sharpening it up. I still have those things in the house.
And you watched your father doing this? You saw him doing it?
Of course. And how we still love chicken, I don't know. I love chicken. We go eat it every Wednesday and Tuesdays at the Colonel, what's his name? Colonel KFC?
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Okay.
And
so
you know where he died?
No.
Mississauga.
Really?
The colonel lived and died in Mississauga. Yeah.
But you, see, I'm talking about Harbord Village, and you are talking about Major.
That's all I know.
But what I'm saying is how wonderful that is, because Major itself was such a community.
It was magnificent community.
Yeah. That's what I'm
We had plumbers. We had painters. We had everybody who was able to contribute to the well-being of the community, except doctors. They came later. Dr. Shaw used to come in, take care of our family with a few eggs my parents gave him. I never saw any money.
So they paid him. It was a trade.
Ask Dr. Joe.
Yeah.
His son is still working down on College Street. And whenever I walk in there, I'm in tears. And thank him for being a Shaw. Yeah. Lola Shaw is a person I went to high school with. Her husband died. And so, the vacant heart needs love to fill. Your beloved husband still fills your heart and always will. I'm given to writing rhymes. I have bookloads of rhymes given to all the family, not one of which has indicated they have read it. Not one. Are you ready? Are you really ready? Okay. You forced me to this. You've heard thunder rumbling? Did you know it's only raindrops grumbling to go out and play? After all, even raindrops can't stay in all day. And so it was because the raindrops that cloud were not allowed out, they all began to pout and complain. We aren't allowed rain anymore, and staying inside's a tiresome bore. Well, up popped Mrs. Sop, the mistress of the cloud, who was endowed with a kind and loving mien. You've been truly unduly unruly. Why can't you be good? And she made the sternest face she possibly could. Why can't you be fair? It's too cold out there. You'll freeze, she said. Oh, please, please, the raindrops pled, with a hint of a glint in each watery eye. You might think it a tear, but raindrops can't cry. Well, so high aloft, Mrs. Sop was soft, reluctantly. She gave them permission on the condition they all get warmly dressed. Hurrah! Cried the rest, like all good children, all for fun. One by one they kissed their Mrs. Sop. Kerplop, kerplop, kerplop. But mind the season, she amended. For no reason are you to stay after winter has ended. We'll be back in time, the rest replied, smiles on their faces rainbow wide. But Mrs. Sop knew a few would be late to return. Yet she couldn't be stern even with those. She used to be late herself, goodness knows. Well, before you knew it, each raindrop went to it, grabbing itself a piece of cloud and wrapping itself in a shroud of furry white fluff. Enough, enough, cried the cloud. For crying out loud, if you grab every piece, you see, there won't be anything left of me. Then in a hurry, furry, flurry, in a great big cheer, they leapt off into the cold atmosphere. So now you know. Or did you always know? Snowflakes, a raindrop dressed in a fur coat.
You have a wonderful memory.
But that is fine.
Yes.
I'm always given to writing, so that kept me alert.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just have a few more questions.
Don't worry about few schmoo.
Do you feel that the university being so close has an effect on our living here, on you, on the neighborhood?
It wasn't so close. It's much, 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 much. And I've worked with every sport, everything, and I'm a big contributor to university. 25, $2,600 to the sports, $500 to the opera program. I'm very much part of the University of Toronto. I've never been there.
Yeah.
And I even sent $2,000 to UCLA never to write me anything again.
Okay.
I have a friend, Nancy Freeman, no less than homecoming queen, 1953, no less Rose Parade queen, January 1st, 1954. I have asked the alumni, mm-hmm. would you kindly tell me how I can reach Nancy Freeman? They don't even know who she is. I've sent pictures of her in the Los Angeles Times paper to show them who she is. No, they can't find her. Here's to Queen Anne, whose gay eyes enhance the brightest stars in the sky. Here's to a queen low poets may glean in vain and only may sigh. Here's to a queen so pure, so supreme, long may she reign on her throne, and may she descend to remember this friend when the days of our years have flown. I never knew she got it, and they can't tell me where she is, and I've never been able. 54? 57 years
yeah,
ago.
That's too bad. Really too
no,
bad.
It's stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sent them money. Thank you for the convenience of being there. I don't want to hear from you ever again.
I want to ask one more question.
Why only one more? Am I not interesting enough?
What about Kensington Market? Do you feel that it has had an influence on
oh,
us in this neighborhood?
Not anymore.
Okay.
It was all Jewish.
Okay.
We'd go down there and deal pickle.
So you would just help yourself to the pickles?
A huge barrel of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I loved the pickles.
Did you pay for them or you just stuck
no,
your hand in?
No, pay for them. As a matter of fact, we had 5 delicatessens on College Street. We had Becker's, we had Welts, and the one I can't always remember, oh, we had 4. On the corner where there's a thing called Kaplansky now.
Yes.
Ugh. Oh, what a. And the other one was started with letter R. Now, that was there were 4 there. We had 3 cinemas on College. Oh, I spent all my life in cinemas. We had 3 on Bloor Street. We had one on Spadina called the Pickfair, the Pickford, after Mary Pickford. One on Dundas and Bathurst called the LaSalle. We had the Alhambra, the Midtown, and the Bloor. On College, we had the Bellevue, the Playhouse, and the Garden. Why would you have to go? I mean, I didn't even know where. I had to get my birth certificate. I had to get my birth certificate to play baseball, and I didn't know when my birthday was. Mama, when was I born? Etlatig, before Pesach. You know what that means,
eh? A few days before Pesach.
Yeah. It could have been March, it could have been April. Anyway,
yeah.
I had to provide proof that I was of age to play. Where do I go? Wellesley Bay. Where's that? Well, you go along, and I finally got my birth certificate. April 19th. I was 13 years old, and I didn't know when my birth. None of us ever had a birthday party. None of us. We never cared about birthday. There was no money anyway. And when I got bar mitzvahed, I got 2 religious books from my sister Dvorah's family-in-law.
But you did have a bar mitzvah.
Oh, everyone has a bar mitzvah.
And which shul was that at?
The one that we attend on on Markham and Ulster.
Yeah, yeah. And what they call the Joe Greenberg shul.
He saved it.
Yeah, I know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, my nephew, Dr. David, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, this is your fault. He turned 50. '09. He was born in 59, okay. 50's pretty nifty, but it's only 50. Midlife crisis? For the sum, the prices dismay, and dreams are sundered. You've had practice. Your next act is to expand your horizons, so far. Blow your own horn to the manner born like a tekiah on the shofar. So here's to you from an uncle who dubs you monarch of all you survey. No diadem, it's just pro tem, because you're only king for a day. Now, he came in on his 40th birthday carrying a son, JJ. I don't know what those initials stand for, because I had been botched. I had an operation that was botched, betrayed, lied to, covered up. I've written over 1,000 letters, not a single response. 5 blood clots, 3 operations, for a nothing operation. So I said to myself, JJ, you know, he's gonna be 13 very soon. So I wrote this lovely poem and sent him 13 times chai.
Woo, that's big.
3 of them last Friday.
Wow.
$234 each. That's $702 for the 3 of them.
Very nice. Very nice.
But that's my role.
I want to come back to the... You said that there were so many theaters around.
Cinemas.
And you enjoy those a lot. And there's only one left in this neighborhood now.
Well, you should know about the original Yiddish theater.
In this neighborhood?
Dundas and Spadina.
Okay, but
the
that's
Strand.
Not...
The Strand.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
The feeling of Judaism is what we're talking about.
Okay.
I don't really have any other thought. I'm grateful to have been born into this Jewish situation. I'm not very religious. I go in memory of the people who've died. The tradition of being in a synagogue at the time. One of my dearest friends was Simon Wiesenthal, whom I met in Linz and then later in Vienna, till I got this bone situation that stopped me from going in 98. And when I spoke about maybe my friend who made his debut at the Met, James King, Simon Wiesenthal, Birgit Nilsson, and Ricky DiGiuseppe all died in the same year. Whammo, whammo, bammo. Simon, did I say Simon? No. He died in 05. No, I'm sorry. I was correct the first time. I write a lot of... Mostly I write the same grieving... I just felt it was heartfelt when I wrote it, but it hasn't lost any of its pulmonary activity, so I just write the same thing. What did I jump from to something for no reason? What did you ask me the last thing? Oh yeah, the Strand Theater, I never attended, and it probably went out of theatrical business because it became a cinema, a kind of a body house, and now it's, of course, like the whole neighborhood down there, it's owned by Chinese.
Yeah.
But it would have been wonderful if they kept it as a Yiddish theater, because now the Yiddish theater of such is at the Jewish Community Center, the Greens.
Yeah.
Now, there's something about, you asked Joe, the Greens lived up the street, Al Latner lived down the street, and they formed Greenwood Construction. I mean, this street created some of the great construction companies, the Lashes. You see, I'm professor. I really don't know what I'm saying. It's just coming out, but there's no real knowledge behind it.
But you have a lot of wonderful, a richness of information.
No, you've got me going, and I'm on a skid, and I'm just. Okay, can you redirect any of this that you need rather than me?
Do you? I'm choosing another topic right now.
Anything.
Do you remember in this neighborhood the end of World War II? Do you have memories of that?
I remember more the death of Roosevelt. I remember going out and grieving 1945, I think it was. April, just about then. The war ended not too long after that, and I went down, tried to mingle. I'm not really a mingler. I really don't enjoy a lot of people doing a lot of things they might later reflect on as being unworthy of them. Celebration, you see, we, a whole bunch of hundreds, maybe not hundreds, went to Montreal to show the Quebecers how much they love them because they're confronting the Quebecois leaving Canada. You remember that? Not so many years ago, there was a vote, the we and the non. Okay? So, the known one won out, oops, by that much. And how much did they love them? They went out and celebrated while the people they really love were grieving over their loss. And that goes in sports. I hate it. Celebrating over a loss of people you should respect and give the affection of thank you for making us a better team than we've ever been before. Well, they jump on each other and I don't find that funny at all. I dislike it. I don't watch hockey. I don't watch any sport because I grew up in a different ambience or something. As for the end of that, Joe wasn't here because he was stationed elsewhere. And Brother Dave hadn't been married yet, so Dave was about 18. I didn't see him at home because he was I can't even tell you. See, I can only tell you certain things precisely because they impacted at that time. But I do remember going to Bay Street, maybe. Maybe Yonge Street was the center of it all at college, but I didn't get that close, and I didn't want to penetrate into what imagined.
Are you talking about now about the declaration of the end of the Second World War?
Yeah,
so you have memories about that people were on the street. No.
Not here.
Yeah, but they went downtown.
I guess.
Yeah.
Let's face it, they would still be at work, earning a living.
Yeah.
That was the main thing, earning a living. There's one funny story. Novitsky, Novitsky, a little man from, was his second wife, a little man who worked making dill pickles at Switzer's Delicatessen. Aside from the four I mentioned here, there were two on Spadina near Dundas.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was Switzer's and?
Shopsies.
Shopsiewicz.
Yeah.
Do you know who Harold Ballard was? Mm-hmm. Harold Ballard and I got along famously. Bill Ballard, his son, gives $2,000 to the fund every year. He was in partnership with Michael Cole. Michael Cole saved that Broadway production of the Spider-Man, $40 million. Michael took it over. Michael used to share that $2,000, but now Michael's in Florida. So the Novitskys lived at 129. And they were
talking about Major Street.
Major Street,
of course.
And there was Louis, Manny, Jackie, Bella, and Joey. So Louis is a little older than me. He's still alive, I believe. I've not seen him for a very long time. Then Jackie, who unfortunately came to grief, walked in and he said, "Pa, I'm changing my name to Norman." And his father said, "Yeah, that's okay, my son." And then Manny, who got killed on a ski trail, he's the guy that asked me to write the musical for the dentistry because he was a dentist. I loved Manny. Manny comes and he said, "Dad, I'm changing my name to Norman." "But what is this? How can you have two people with the same name Norman. He didn't know it was the last name.
Oh, Novitsky to Norman. Got it. Yeah.
So these are little nonsense.
No, lovely story.
In 135, were black family, the Marshalls. I love the Marshalls. And Hardy and Jimmy was my contemporary, were having a BB fight. Oy. If you go into the hall, into that French door, you'll see a hole in the bottom of one of the panes of glass. The BB missed and flew right through. Jimmy came over, he said, "Mort, I'm sorry." But Jimmy used to come in and change the light, and the Marshalls. Jerry learned how to sing Yiddish songs.
Talking about Yiddish, what language did you speak at home when you were growing up?
I didn't know much Yiddish, but I understood a lot. Uh-huh. But my parents, when they didn't wish us to know anything, spoke Russian. And my mother could speak, I don't know what the difference is, she could speak Polish, Ukrainian, Russian, and she would hire help of those people who were one of that tongue.
Right.
My father, of course, could go to synagogue and sit there and go through the whole Megillah all by himself.
Wow.
And there's a chair on the porch that I'm reluctant to throw away, because that's what he sat on. Just sat there and
shuckled.
Yeah.
Did some of your friends' parents speak Yiddish at home?
Of course.
Uh-huh. And did some of your friends speak Yiddish to their parents?
I would think they'd have to.
Oh, because the parents didn't know English.
They were too busy working to do anything else.
Yeah.
To do anything else. But you know, the woman of every family is much smarter. All the Portuguese women are much smarter than the men. And I lost one very dear Portuguese woman not too many months. Yeah, months now, I guess, a couple of months. And at curling club, although I don't curl, mm-hmm. at the end of the year, I'm given a turkey and I give it to number 94. And inevitably, 2 or 3 days later, I get turkey legs, sausages, roast potatoes.
So you
soup.
Give them the turkey, but they give you all kinds of cooked
goodies. It's not meant to be way, but they are wonderful. Yeah. When I'm ill, they come in with a thermometer and test my... For the 70th time, I fasted. The 70th time. But it cost me 102 point something degrees. And I didn't phone my brother, I didn't phone it. I just said, "Lucy, you have a thermometer?" And she came and she took care of me like I was her own.
So you have a nice relationship.
With all the neighbors.
Yeah.
With all the neighbors.
So Major Street is like a large family in some ways.
All the neighbors are my dearest friends.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely.
I cannot tell you. If I need anything in the house done, they put in a shower, they change the footings of the house, they built a patio out back.
So this is a wonderful place.
When the kids wanted to buy a jacket because they won the football championship in the school, I had to go and be a go, because $50, that's a lot. So I said, So I paid it.
So it's give and take, is what you're saying.
They adore me.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm shopping, I get virgin olive oil because I know any of them use it all the time. Why would I not? You can go in the kitchen, you can see the containers left over from what I empty. And inevitably, I'm phoning them. They send their kids in to pick up the empties so they can
fill them up again.
Mrs. Fernandez brought in, spare ribs, rice. So I emptied it into my own containers, and her son, who's a fireman, Paolo, came by, Sometimes he cuts my hair, otherwise I cut it myself. I said, Paula, would you mind taking the container back to your mom? Within an hour, she's back in the same container, filled up again. And I keep phoning, would you come by, please? Take some of this food. I'm dying here. I cannot tell you. This neighborhood sustains, supports, I can't tell you, not the family. Of all the family, most of them, 90% plus, have never been in this house. This is where their great-grandparents, their grandparents and parents lived. And they're not interested? I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. I just think, what a waste not to be interested. You have to be interested to become something of something or know what you don't. You have to do things to know whether you like them or not. Even doing a job, if it's not the good one, at least you know that. That's something useful. And I found UCLA. I was working at Uncle Al's hamburger stand. Sorry, Mort, I'm selling it out. Here's a book for you, opera. And one night, a guy comes by named James Dean, happens to be an actor, and he says, we'd like some money for gas. 17 cents. What about the till? No, I don't go into the till. So James Dean kills himself in a car crash, owing me 17 cents. Then another night, a gentleman comes by with a child, orders a couple of hamburgers, and I make the hamburgers, and he says, how much? And I said, ain't nothing you can do here, Mr. Mercer, Johnny Mercer, the great lyricist, one person I've loved all my life. And then he said to me, you know me? I said, yeah, I love you. I've been sending you lyrics from Toronto, and I get the usual form letter. Here's my home address. Send them to me. And what he did was send back the originals and write in the margin, good tune, good lyrics, what's the tune, or something like that. Johnny Mercer. Then I got a wonderful job, gas station, which now pays me, because of my social insurance, $76 a month.
Wow.
They just went up this January by $2.
That's substantial.
Of course it is. Yeah. But, you see, I worked enough quarters, except my best friend had four children, the youngest of whom was in Desert Storm. What are you going to do with your your GI Bill? Oh, Mort, I'm sorry. It was too late. I said, what? How can you be too late for the GI Bill? So I started to phone his senator, representative, phoned in Washington, California, but his family didn't want to take part. So at the final moment, I wrote to University Avenue, the consulate, and I said, how is this possible? Oh, by the way, I just turned 65. Am I eligible for social insurance in the States? Mr. Greenberg, sorry, you don't have enough quarters. You only have 12. You need 30, I think, something like that. Thank you very much. Oh, no, wait. We have a reciprocal arrangement. If you can prove you've been paying taxes for the required number of months, yeah, because it's quarters. I said, of course, I returned. I started paying fully since 1962, and now it was, 22 years later. Voila. $50. It's gone from 50 steadily up. And isn't it marvelous? And people keep talking about the United States. And of course, all the great opera that I've heard, the best symphony, the best ballet, some of the best theater on Broadway, of course. And I love the U.S. because some of my best friends, a lot of my best friends, my PhD in Rochester, John, don't send me any New York Times crosswords after Tuesday. Monday and Tuesday I can do, but it gets harder, and Sunday it's impossible.
Let me bring you back here. Okay.
please.
Your stories are wonderful.
No, the point is, I don't speak with anybody.
Yeah.
You came in here, and I have a chance to talk with somebody. Frank phones me about a difference in money, but it's not conversation. Go ahead.
I'd like to wind up our interview for
today.
Please,
I'm getting tired of me.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about?
Oh, no, that's
about
up
the
to
street,
you.
The neighborhood?
The mail used to come 11 times a week.
Twice a day
for 5 days, and Mr. Dunn used to come in because, knowing that my parents couldn't read English, he'd bring in my sister's mail from Palestine, and he'd read it to my parents. I loved Mr. Dunn, but then everybody how could you not think of things in a very positive and loving way? Except my sister Rose phoned me and got me out of cheder during my bar mitzvah time and said to me, "Did you steal money from me? Who do these comic books belong to?" I said, they're Wilfred's up the street. "No, they're not. You took money from me to buy comic books." Of course I did. How else was I going to buy comic books for a dime? So over a year or two, I may have taken $4 or $5, excuse me. So she took the original Superman, Batman, put them in the fire. Who was to know? That was the stove we had. It was a wood burning on one side and gas on the other side. And the markings of the leggings are still in the floor. And that's 1942.
But that in itself is another change. You had a wood burning stove.
Well, that's why I changed the whole kitchen for my mother. That was 42, and I'm talking about 69. 27 years later, and in the interim, my dad was hucking away.
One last question. Is there some kind of little garden at the back or a piece of land behind the house?
Of course, there's a yard.
Okay. How was it used when you were growing up? And then what are the changes that have happened to people using their backyards?
I had a marvelous neighbor, Portuguese, Manuel. He used to plant my garden with all manners of vegetables, but then he died, and it's just grown up weeds.
So for many years it was a flourishing vegetable garden
only with him. But I've offered anybody in the neighborhood, come and use it. It's gone. It doesn't have any use at all.
So right now it's just weeds. and not being used
weeds.
At all.
But it's amazing. There's a picture on my refrigerator of me with a ball in my hand, because I always was going to be a ball player. And it looked like a very large yard, but of course it's very small comparatively now.
What was it when you were growing up? How was the yard used? Or was
not
it
not at all?
Not at all.
My sister was married in this very room, Sister Rose, in 1941. She did appear with her people at the window. Oh, Joe's the person. I mean, you've wasted your time.
No, I haven't wasted my time.
No, not for me you haven't.
Or for me.
No, I don't care about you. you know what I say? And please, it's not meant in any derogatory or whatever other way I'm trying to suggest it's not. Eleanor, I've defined love for myself as anybody who makes me feel good about myself. So at the moment, I love you dearly because that's what you've done for me. I don't know what it does for you, but I love any... See, when you go to court and it's irreconcilable differences, they never say, "Well, he doesn't make me feel good about myself anymore." But that's what it is.
Well, I want to tell you, I have enjoyed our time together, and you have added very richly to what we're looking at, what the neighborhood was like. We see what it's like now, and your anecdotes and your stories have been treasure for us.
You have not begun.
Yeah.
You have not begun. I have lived without even knowing it. It was there ready for me to mine, and I don't know. My parents didn't say, where are you going and why? Ma, I'm off to school in California. My father would write me in Yiddish. Was machst du wie es genieg? That's all he could write. There was never any shared experience between us. And I would write back in Yiddish the best way I could. And then I got fed up with the bureaucracy at CBC, and I decided to go to Europe.
Okay, I'm just going to turn this off for
Please
now.
Please do.